you very much, and thanks to the organizers for inviting me to this nice conference. So, the aim of this talk is to state a main lemma, to prove it as far as possible, and maybe to explain which is the interest of it for computation of modular forms and related topics. So maybe I'll first state the main lemma of this talk. It's a computational lemma. So the input of the lemma is C. Well, first of all, the finite field FQ. C, a plane projective curve over FQ, which is assumed to be absolutely irreducible. I don't write it. And it is given by its equation in projective coordinates. It is not assumed to be smooth at all. It has a degree d and a genus g. So this is what is given. I have a few more data. For example, since the curve may be singular, I ask for some information about its singularities. What I need exactly is for every singular branch of the curve, I need a local parameter plus some expansion of the local affine coordinates in terms of this local parameter. So I need essentially a local desingularization at every branch. So why do I ask for that? In principle, it's well known that there are thousands of algorithms that produce such information starting from just the equation of the curve. The point is that there are many algorithms and there are few complexity proofs for these algorithms. There do exist complexity proof in case of characteristic zero, which are very well written. But if you assume the characteristic is, say, smaller than a degree, it's very likely, but as far as I know, not rigorously proven, that you can, in polynomial time, in log Q and D, reconstruct these expansions, this desingularization at every branch. So since I want to avoid to rely on something which does not clearly exist, I prefer to include it in the input of the main lemma. For all the applications, this information will just be found in the books about modular forms, for example, so it's no problem. So I assume I have some information about singularities. Well, in the simplest case, for example, the singularities will be ordinary singularities, ordinary multiple points, and then this will be evident. What else do I need? Well, something still innocent, I need some omega, a divisor, well, defined over FQ, with degree G, the genus of the curve. So this divisor is going to serve as some origin in the computation. So I just allow the user of this lemma to choose himself which divisor he prefers. And then I need something less innocent. I need a zeta function of the function field of the curve. So this is, well, maybe the strongest assumption in this lemma. I really assume that I already know, for example, the number of points in the Jacobian, and even more than that. This is for the input. The lemma states that there exists an algorithm that on this input outputs something, which I will now describe. And this will be done in probabilistic polynomial time. In what? Well, in log Q and the degree D. I don't say polynomial in G because you have to be careful that for given curve, you may find silly plane models with arbitrarily large degree D, and this will create artificial complications. So I really bound in here. And so, and it is a probabilistic algorithm. And what is the output? Well, the output is finally of divisors. Let's call them Ti, that are parameterized by some integer between 1 and capital I, that are effective degree G, the genus, defined over FQ, and such that when I look at the corresponding classes inside the Picard group, so I subtract the origin and consider the corresponding class in the peak zero, this collection of classes is the basis of some vector spaces. It's the basis of the L torsion of the Jacobian of C. This is the Jacobian. And more precisely, it's the basis of the rational part of the L torsion inside the Jacobian. And L is a prime number which should be given in the input. The prime number. And it also appears in the complexity. So the lemma states that there is an algorithm that on input a plane curve plus its zeta function outputs a basis for the L torsion of the Jacobian in this of this curve. Well, not the whole L torsion, but the rational, the FQ rational part of this L torsion. Of course, this is a vector space over the field with L elements, so I just need to be given a basis for it. And this basis is given by a collection of elements, and every class is represented classically as a difference between some effective degree G divisor and some given origin. What else should I say? So it's polynomial in log Q, which is logical. It's polynomial in D, which is logical also. I cannot avoid that. It's polynomial in L, which makes it a rather weak statement, because after all, you may wonder if it's not possible to have the same result replacing L by log L. That would be very reasonable. And the reason why you have L here will only become clear in the course of the proof of the theorem. I mean, this L arises because in some bad cases, you really need to do nasty computations involving the prime L, such as considering degree L extension of the prime of the field FQ, things like that. So the L is what makes this lemma not so strong. Another thing to say is that it is probabilistic in the bad sense of the term. It's Monte Carlo probabilistic, which means that this algorithm may lie. Sometimes it gives a wrong answer. It gives a wrong answer with probability 1/2. Say. But if the answer is wrong, it is not so wrong. It just gives you a basis for some smaller subspace. So it may be wrong, but not that much. And of course, if you reiterate this algorithm many times, and if you get always the same dimension with very high probability, you know that the answer is correct. But it's still a probabilistic algorithm. So this means that when we are going to use this algorithm, we should have a second step in which we sort of control the result. So we should have the option of controlling that the result. We should have another method to control that the result will be the correct one when we shall be led to using this lemma.
Can I just clarify, this is a basis over FL, like a basis as an FL vector space?
Yeah. It's a basis over FL.
So how many elements?
At most 2G. At most 2G, what G is the genus. Very often after all, it may be just zero after all. There is no L torsion rational. And sometimes, I mean, the typical case, it will be a one-dimensional vector space. And in that case, the lemma is useless, because if the space is one-dimensional, very naive method will do. I mean, the lemma is true in terms of complexity because we have to take into account the case when the dimension is very high. And then we have trouble because of all these divisors with L torsion coming together.
So can you prove if the dimension is 0 or 1, can you prove that in polynomial time?
You mean, it's probabilistic in that case.
You can take the L theory as a test. If it's 0, then L does not divide.
Yeah, for 0, that's
0 is 1. The
but what happens is that you have the cardinality, so you know the order of the Sylow group. Okay, so you already have some indication, but it is not a very clear answer. You have some indication. You already know an upper bound from the Zieser function, and also a lower bound, of course.
But it could, be divisible by a large RML and still have dimension 1.
Exactly. This is typically the cases like that which make the complexity bad. When you have, a disorganized L-Sylow group inside the Jacobian, then it makes things complicated. For example, a typical trivial case, if you just bound, if you fix the genus of the curve, say genus 1, then this is trivial. You just compute the L torsion polynomial of the curve and then look for rational roots. So why can't you do that for any genus? Well, because if the genus tends to infinity, you may define something equivalent to the L torsion polynomial, but then the degree of this polynomial would be L to the power 2g, and this is exponential in g, so you don't want to do that. This is the reason why we have to work still to prove this theorem, because the bad case is when the genus tends to infinity. And of course, we shall use this lemma when in some cases where the genus g tends to infinity. So before sketching a proof of this lemma, I will give some motivation. So there is a question raised, as far as I know, by Hannes Hof in 1995, which is, can one compute coefficients of modular forms efficiently? What does this mean? Well, you just fix once for all the modular form, for example, the Ramanujan form, and you say, well, given prime p, large prime p, can you compute the pth coefficient in the q expansion of this modular form in time polynomial in log p? And why did René Hof ask this question? Well, because there is one case in which he could answer the question himself. If the weight of the modular form is 2, and if it is an eigenform, a cusp form, then attached to this form there is an elliptic curve, and computing the pth coefficient is nothing but computing the cardinality of the curve mod p. And this is done.
You're assuming that it's a rational eigenvalue.
Yeah, in that case, well, not in the question, no. I don't necessarily assume it, but here, yes.
You just want to compute the coefficient.
But if it has not rational value, you have an abelian variety, and it's still polynomial in log p. It's not polynomial in the degree of the definition field of the coefficients. And then you also can compute the order of any abelian variety for fixed dimension in polynomial time in the size of the field. This is Pilar, Jonathan Pilar work.
But this only does the AP, not the AAF, right?
Yes, yeah. So the question stands.
F factors.
Yeah. The question is for prime indices. So, now some people that claim that maybe if we could directly compute AN for any N and deduce a factoring algorithm, but this is more science fiction. But why not? I don't know. But whatever we shall do, use massively Frobenius actions, so you are assumed to know factorization in case the index is not prime index. So this fourth algorithm, and it is indeed polynomial in log p. So then Bass-Eddigshoven had quite a lot of ideas about this problem, and he sort of proposed a sort of program for that, which he exposed in several preprints. And well, we discussed with Bass-Eddigshoven. Then we interacted also with someone who is called Johan de Jong, Robin de Jong, sorry. There was also some contribution by Franz Merkel and quite other people. And in the end, there is a theorem which involves work by all these people. There exists an algorithm that computes tau of p, so this is the coefficient attached to the Ramanujan Mondlar form of weight 12, level 1, in polynomial time in log p for prime p. And this time, the probabilistic is probabilistic in the good sense of the term, it's Las Vegas. But it means that it never lies. It may refuse to answer with probability 1/2. But in that case, you just rerun it, and you get another opportunity to have a good answer with probability 1/2. And well, the method, I mean, the ideas of Bass-Eddigshoven and the method developed certainly do apply for any even weight rational Mondlar form. But I mean, there are unfortunately technicalities that should be adapted in any case. So in the end, we decided to write a paper that focused on that very special case. What else should I say? Well, it's probabilistic. There are many reasons to believe it will be made deterministic. And I will explain what happens. The reason is that at some point, we have something to compute. We have essentially to compute some modular representation which is sitting inside some Jacobian. And the method we use is to make some numerical approximations. And we have two options. Either we make complex numerical approximations, or p-adic numerical approximation, or we use the mod p method, which means that we compute this object mod p from various small auxiliary primes p. And well, the advantage of the mod p and of the p-adic method is that it is much easier to justify theoretically, because we don't have that many accuracy problems. So this is why we wrote a paper in these settings. The inconvenient is that we must use this lemma, which is irreducibly probabilistic. The complex method is a bit dirty. It's more difficult to justify. But since we work inside a set of complex points of some Jacobian, I mean, there is nothing probabilistic there. We have some torus, we can move in it the way we like, and we are not obliged to pick random points at any time. So if we manage, well, to write down carefully it's the complex method, then this theorem will switch from probabilistic to deterministic. There is an open question, which is, in my opinion, very important, even for cryptographic reasons. The question is, okay, can you adapt this algorithm to to make it treat the case of any weight, not just even weight. In particular, can you treat the case of half integer weight? If this would be the case, it would make it possible to compute in polynomial time the order of some class group of quadratic, imaginary quadratic field, for example. And this would not be innocent from the point of view of cryptography, because the status of class groups of imaginary quadratic fields from the point of view of cryptography seems to me very unclear. I mean, it's not clear to me whether it's easy or not to compute their cardinality. And it's an important problem because, as far as I understand, there are many cryptographic protocols that use the fact that it's difficult to compute the order of some group. And systematically, I don't know a single example of such group in which the difficulty does not lie on the difficulty of factoring integers. So the question is, well, what about class groups of rings of integers? Is it really difficult? Because if it is really difficult, they produce new examples, well, serious examples maybe, of cryptographic groups for which we cannot easily compute the cardinality. And if it is easy to compute the cardinality of these class groups, well, one should explain which is the method, which is the algorithm to do that. That's not clear to me. Okay, so this is for the motivation. Now I have to connect, of course, this question of computing modular forms, coefficient of modular forms, and this nasty lemma about Jacobians of curves in finite fields. I also have to erase a little bit.
And what you were just saying, were you talking about class groups of number fields or class groups like ideal class groups?
No, class groups of any number field. For example, the simplest case is imaginary number field. Can you compute the order of the class group in polynomial time is discriminant, the log of the discriminant, for example? That's a sensible question, which is very strange. I'm impressed that this question is dissimulated somehow. When people do crypto with it, they evolve the problem sort of. But it's a question. Can you at least answer to that question? Can you, yes or no, compute the order of these groups in polynomial time in their size? And more generally, can you exhibit a single group, finite commutative, for which it's difficult to compute its order, even if you know how to factor efficiently? So assume you have an oracle to factor integers. Can you produce a group for which it's still difficult to compute the order of the group? So, maybe I erase here. So I have to make some connection. I recall that when I sum tau of n, while tau is a Ramanujan function, this is the definition of the Ramanujan function after all, there is an expression as a sum, infinite sum, there is another expression as a product, which is not mysterious. So it is a weight 12 level 1 modular form, cusp form. So the idea of Eddig-Sauven is that we can mimic Sroff algorithm. At this time, we do not compute a coefficient of a modular form of weight 2, because the weight is 12. So still, we take L, which is going to be this prime, and a small auxiliary prime. And we say, well, it suffices to compute tau of p mod L, because then we can use Chinese remainder theorem. So we boil down to computing tau of p mod L for some small auxiliary prime L. And then this turns out to be the trace of some Galois representation. Namely, let's call VL some dimension 2 FL vector space sitting inside the Jacobian. I explain what this is. So I take G1 of L, Jacobian of X1 of L, the modular curve. I take the L torsion of it. I take the set of points over Q bar. So this is the dimension 2G vector space over FL with Galois action on it. And inside this thing, there is a small subspace. J1 of L. L. I have forgotten P for the moment. Okay, so for the moment I just care about L. So I have this small subspace which is stable by Galois action, which means that I have a modular representation about 4L from the Galois group of Q into the automorphism of this dimension 2 space, which is just GL2L. I have to say that we have to assume that L is at least 11 and is different from 23 and 691, so-called special primes. So I have a very small piece inside this Jacobian, this big Jacobian, which is a linear representation of the Galois group. And the information that I'm looking for, which is this tau of P mod L, is given by this representation, because tau of P mod L for large prime P, so it's capital P, to say it's a large prime, is nothing but a trace in this representation of the Frobenius at capital P. So which means that we have a method, if we manage to compute this object, after all, what is this object? It's a variety of dimension zero, degree L squared. So essentially, it's not, well, you can remove the zero because the zero is defined over Q. So essentially, it's also, it can be shown that this action is transitive. So what you have is actually a degree L squared minus one polynomial with coefficients, both rational coefficients. And which defines an extension, Galois extension of Q with Galois group, essentially this, well, not exactly this group, it's a small index group of that. And if you have a model, an explicit model for this extension, namely a polynomial, certainly it's very easy to compute for even a large prime P what is the Frobenius in this Galois extension. So if you have an explicit description of this small object, which is nothing but a polynomial of degree L squared minus one, then for any prime P, you can compute tau of P mod L in time polynomial in log P and L.
Excuse me.
Yeah?
Sorry, I missed. So how did J1 of L relate to the modular form? The modular form is just delta in this case?
Sorry, how?
Why J1 of L? How does it relate to the modular form you're trying to compute?
Well, basically, it's not evident. I mean, there is all work in a modular theory of modular form that tells you that there is a congruence mod L between this weight 12 modular form and some weight 2 modular form of level L. So you can lower down, you can lower the level at the expense of raising, so it's a congruence. You can lower the weight at the expense of raising the level. And well, it's equivalent to say that you have this VL and to say that there is such a modular form which is congruent to the Ramanujan form modular L. Because if you have a modular form of weight 2, then you have a differential. If you have a differential with some good action, Ecker action on it, certainly you can read it inside the L torsion as well. Because it's goes to the homology and then to the torsion, etc.
So is L the prime that comes out of using that process for this particular module?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
You can't just
for every L, yes. Yeah. For every L, you have a modular form of level L, and which gives you the information modular L. So this reduces the problem to that computational question. We have a very small object, which is in itself seems innocent. It's just a variety of dimension zero. It's just an extension of Q of degree L square minus one. It is lost inside this ugly object. This is an ugly object. Why? Well, because it's a dimension zero variety for the moment. Everything is OK, but the number of points in this dimension zero variety is just L to the 2g. So it's totally out of question to compute the whole L torsion of the Jacobian. So we have to, so to say, we have to project directly inside this VL, which is small, without being able to, being forced to compute the whole thing. So the idea now is that we want to compute this object, which is an algebraic object, and we have two options. Either we, well, clearly, an algebraic approach will fail, apparently, because any algebraic approach will mean that you have to write down the equation, meaning that you have L torsion divisors. And this will define a terrible ideal in some algebra, which is of degree 2 to the L to the 2g, and this will not work. So we stick to some analytic method. Well, so the first analytic method, which I will not describe in detail, is the complex analytic method. It's the most natural. Remember that this VL is a subspace inside the L torsion on which we have some nice action of Galois. And indeed, we also have a nice Ecke action. It can be described as the intersection of the kernels of Tn minus tau n for every n. This means that it is a subspace inside the L torsion on which the Ecke algebra acts with the character on L associated to the tau function. So it means the eigenvalues of the Ecke operators are given by the Ramanujan function. And this characterizes Vn. And of course, the inconvenience of this formula, it is infinite because we have the intersection between infinitely many sets. But because we know that the Ecke algebra is generated by the first few Ecke operators, we can actually restrict this formula to n between 1 and L squared, and even a bit less. So we have a characterization of this VL by equations that are essentially linear equations in the automorphism ring of the Jacobian. So this appeals to some complex analytic method, because let's consider the set of complex points inside the Jacobian of x1 of L. So this is a complex torus, c to the g, divided by the lattice of periods. And this can be computed very well using magic symbols. And it's a very nice and well-controlled theory. And this is a linear object, numerical object. And inside this thing, the VL we are looking for is just given by linear equation, because the Ecke operators act on the torus by linear equations. It's just a matter of writing down matrices to find out which are the points here we are interested in. So it seems we are done. Just by linear algebra, we find out the VL we are looking for. Only problem, this is not at all an algebraic model. This is a complex analytic model. And what we do need is a field of definition of these points, and we cannot read that directly on this analytic model. So we have to algebraize this thing, and then we have two options. When you want to algebraize a torus, you may use theta functions. But the problem with theta functions, they are defined by expansions in many variables. I mean, James G, you have many variables. And if you want to raise, to reach some accuracy, and you have many variables, the computation time becomes exponential in the number of variables. So we cannot use theta functions. Instead of that, we have to use a Jacobi map. So here we have the curve x1 of L. We form the g symmetric product, and we have something which is almost a bijection. Not quite, unfortunately. So assume we pick here some class, and assume we manage to solve the inverse Jacobi problem. This is Jacobi map. So assume we can find a divisor, t minus the origin, which, well, it's not correct because, well, the origin is implicit in my description, so I just give t an effective divisor of the origin. Assume we can lift this class as a divisor here, then if this t is unique, which is not always the case, unfortunately, then the field of definition of this t is the same as the field of definition of this x. And this is given as a degree g divisor on this curve, and this we can compute efficiently. And once we have a sufficient accurate representation of this divisor on that curve, this means that we have coordinates, so to say, for the corresponding points with much accuracy. This is enough to guess out which are these algebraic integers, because after all, the coordinates of these points is just a sum of g points. The coordinates of these points are just algebraic integers. So if we manage to approximate them with much accuracy, then we can reconstruct the actual values of the coordinates of this point. And this will give us the field of definition of this divisor, which is also the field of definition of this point in VL, which is also the extension we were looking for, defining the Galois representation. Of course, we have two difficulties. First of all, we must prove that all the business about complex approximations is stable and efficient. First difficulty. And second difficulty, we must have a bound on the naive 8 of the points which arise here. And this bound should be polynomial in the data. It should be polynomial in L, which is very difficult. And it was the work of Bass, Edixhoven, and Robin de Jong to prove that such divisors have a naive 8 which is polynomial in L. Okay, so this is for the complex method. And now, what about the p-adic method? So now I take some auxiliary small prime little p, which is not capital P. This time p is small. Well, we also need to realize this VL, but this time, instead of computing VL, a complex approximation of this VL, we shall compute VL modulo P, which means that we are going to reduce the modular curve mod P and try to find this subspace inside the Jacobian mod P. And of course, this is of no help if we just stop here, because with just the reduction of P, we have no information about the field of definition over the field of rational. But if we manage to collect such information from various little primes P, in the end, we can reconstruct the polynomial we are looking for with rational coefficients. Again, we have to use some bound on the 8 of these objects. So the idea is that we do not compute directly this subspace inside the Jacobian of the modular curve. We just reduce this Jacobian mod L mod P for some prime P. So we have G1 of L modulo p this time, so a curve of small genus over a field of small cardinality, and we want to compute inside the torsion of this curve the nice little space we are interested in. And we do that for many p's, and in the end, recollecting all this information, we can deduce the exact value of this VL over Q. And of course, to do that, the lemma I have stated in the beginning of my talk will be of much use because, well, we do have the required input, we do have an equation for the modular curve, we do have a description of its singularities, which is not much work, you just need to know some explicit formulae about modular forms. We do know the zeta function of the modular curve. This is not so trivial because the zeta function of the modular curve is provided by Manin symbols, for example. Well, this is all we need. And the output, well, now we also have, well, algorithms like Brill-Noether algorithms that let us compute inside the Jacobian of any plane curve. It's just a very famous and old algorithm. We also can compute explicitly the action of Ecke correspondences on divisors on this curve, at least if the degree is small, but this is the case. So for small degree Ecke operators, we can compute the action of the Ecke operator. So if we apply the lemma, the output will be a basis. So we also know, I should say that, we have some information of this field we are looking for, and we know when we reduce mod p, we know which is the splitting field of VL mod p. There is a small degree extension, let's call it FQ, that splits the small vector space we are looking for. Of course, the degree of this extension is bounded by the cardinality of that, which is L squared minus 1. So, and we know exactly what it is. So we really can make the proper extension that will make this nice object rational over our base field. So we apply the lemma to this field and to this curve. We obtain a basis for the L torsion inside the Jacobian of this curve. Then, using this basis, we can write down the matrices of the Ecke operators in this basis. And then just by linear algebra, we can identify VL inside the torsion. And that's all. Then we went out with the VL we were looking for. So what I should say, I forgot to say that, but the algorithm I claim to exist at the beginning of my talk not only gives you a basis, it lets you use this basis. I mean, if you are given some extra L torsion class, you are able to give the coordinates of this class inside the basis you have computed, so you can really do linear algebra. In particular, you can express the matrices of Ecke operators in this basis. So this is the sketch of how this lemma is going to be used. And now I have 15 minutes to give a sort of idea of how the lemma is proven. I don't want to erase here because I suppose I have to go. So, as I said, the lemma is a very weak lemma, and this will help proving it. It's very weak because the running time is polynomial in L, not in log L. So we have at least a very naive proof, which does not work, but then I will explain how to repair it. So we are looking for rational points in the Jacobian of the curve, but not only rational points, we want rational L torsion points. So what we do is, well, first, we pick random rational points in the Jacobian. Now we are general again, so I don't assume we have a modular curve, we just have a curve. So we just pick random divisors on the curve, and hope this produce random elements in the Jacobian with a distribution which we hope is not too far from uniform. This will be the difficulty. Once we have done that for some time, we hope we obtain a generator of this group. So once we have a generator for the group of points inside Jacobian, we compute the cardinality of this Jacobian, because we know the zeta function, this is not a problem, and we separate it as the product of some power of L and some prime to L integer. And if we multiply the generators obtained here by L prime, we get a set of generators for the L silo of the set of points. So first of all, we collect many random divisors representing many random classes in the Jacobian, and hope this forms a generating set. Multiply these elements by some well-chosen integer so that we obtain a generating set for the L silo. Now we have to switch from the L silo, having a generating set for the L silo, we deduce a generating set for the L torsion. And then we have a generating set for this vector space, and we have to put some order in it to extract a basis. So which means that we have to compute relations between them. Compute relations between this generating set and find a basis, extract a basis out of it. So four steps: random elements in the Jacobian, random elements in the L silo, random elements in the L torsion, and in the end, the basis we are looking for. And of course, once I have said that, and if I give you any explicit example, it will work. I mean, there is no reason why it shouldn't work. The point is that at every step, almost, we shall have a theoretical difficulty. First step, the difficulty is that how do you prove that you are able to pick random divisors on the curve in such a way that the distribution of the corresponding classes in the Jacobian is uniform? That's not trivial at all. What we can do, of course, is that we have the curve C. We take a map of C, at least the affine part of C, to A1, which is very easy. Here I have a point XY1 in a projective coordinate. I can associate the X coordinate. That's a small degree map onto A1. And then I can pick random polynomials here of degree G, say, and try to lift them as divisor on the curve. If I do that, something terrible happens. For some divisors here, assume for example here I have an irreducible divisor, I will have very few lifts, at most the degree of X. So for some divisors, the number of lifts is very small. But if here I have a smooth polynomial, many factors, I will have exponentially many lifts in the degree of X. So this makes a distortion on the measure, which is so terrible that you have nothing to do with it from a theoretical point of view. And the kind of measure you get in the Jacobian doing that is of no interest as far as I understand theoretically. So we have to do something a bit strange maybe, but more useful theoretically. What we do is that we select a prime which is bigger than 2g minus 2, this is for the Riemann-Orr, to please the Riemann-Orr theorem, and which is bigger than the degree of the map X, the degree of this map. And we do something very strange. We restrict here to polynomials with degree this prime R that are irreducible. So we fix the degree and we ask that these polynomials should be irreducible, and we then try to lift them as divisors on the curve. Sometimes there is no lift. At most, there are D lifts. what is the degree of the map. So the number of leaves is between 0 and d. If it is 0, that's no problem. We just throw the polynomial away. So it means that the distortion we get by lifting the divisor is bounded by d, which is not too bad. And then we push this divisor inside the Jacobian by taking the corresponding class. And then there is no distortion because of the Riemann-Roch theorem, essentially. So with that, we managed to prove some very fun. We have a lemma, which is given a curve in this condition and a degree D map on it like that, in polynomial time, in the size of the field and the degree of the curve, we construct a generating set for the Jacobian J over Q for this group. But unfortunately, I have to add a few words here. It's actually a subgroup of index bounded by the maximum of 48 times the genus, 24 times the degree, and some constant, 720. This is not optimal. So using this process, we can construct a generating set for this group, except that it is not quite a generating set. There is a small obstruction. The index is bounded by something linear in the genus and the degree of the curve. But which is very important, that this does not depend on the size of the field. So we may miss some part of the Jacobian, but the index is bounded by geometric invariants, just the genus essentially. So this is one open question. Could you remove this restriction? Could you find an algorithm, probabilistic of course, that in polynomial time produces a generating set for the Picard group of some plane curve? I don't know. So it seems that we are, and once we have a generating set for a group, it's very easy to pick random elements in this group because we just take linear combinations of these generating elements with large coefficients, and very quickly the distribution converges to infinite, to the uniform distribution, but that's no problem. Of course, we are a bit uncomfortable about that because assume L, the prime we are interested in, recall we are looking for L torsion points, assume L is smaller than that, then it may well be that we are completely missing what we are looking for. We are missing the L torsion. So what do we do in that case? Well, we make a small extension of FQ in such a way that the points we are interested in become divisible by some power of L, which is bigger than its index. And then we can catch these points by getting a little bit further because the bound does not depend on the field. So we extend the field a little bit to be able to divide the point we are looking for, and that way we can catch them. Of course, then the problem is that we are going to compute where a group which is this time bigger than that. So then we have to put order in it. That's not so simple. But the idea is that to overcome this difficulty, just enlarge a bit the finite field so that we can catch the missing points. This is for the first difficulty, pick random element in the Jacobian with uniform or not too far from uniform distribution. Here, there is no difficulty. Once we have generators for a group, we deduce generators for the L silo subgroup by just multiplying at the appropriate integer, provided we know the order of the group. And this is not innocent because the order of the group is known because we have the zeta function of the field, the function field. Here, it becomes more tricky. Assume you are given a black box group, whatever, not necessarily a Picard group, you are given a black box group and you are given generators of this group. You know it is a L group. And people tell you, now produce a generating set for the L torsion of this group. That's not so easy. You can certainly produce easily one L torsion element because you pick any non-zero element in the group, you multiply it by L. If it's zero, you are done. You have a L torsion point. If it is not zero, you continue. And very, very quickly, you get the L torsion point. But what about now the second? Well, you take a second point. You can do the same. But what's happening is that the process I am describing to you is not a morphism of group. It is a map. For any element in the group, I multiply by L until I get an L torsion point. That's a map, but it's not a morphism. I imagine the structure of the group is the following: Z over LZ times Z over L to the 100 Z. If you apply this process to a generating set of that, there is absolutely no chance. The probability that you get a generating set for the torsion of that group is close to zero, because of this coordinate, you will be obliged to most of the time to multiply many times by L, and then you will kill the contribution here. So you will always get points that are lying in the L torsion here, and you will not see the points here. And this is because the process I described is not a morphism of group. So we really do need, given a group, an L-Silow group, L group, we really do need to construct a morphism onto its torsion. In general, that's not easy. It exists, of course, but it's not easy to. Why does it exist? Well, because the group is isomorphic to its dual, essentially. But, well, in that context, duality works very, very well because of the talks we have had with you this morning. And we have Tate and Kumar theory that give us a morphism from the Jacobian, the set of points in the Jacobian, onto the L torsion. So I write it here. I have 5 minutes, and I believe I will succeed in finishing my talk in 5 minutes. We have something given by, I don't know, Kumar theory. I have J, the Jacobian, over F. This time it's capital Q, it's not Q anymore, I will have to explain why. Onto its torsion. L torsion. Defined the following way, pick a point here, and you associate to it phi of R minus R, where R is such that L times R is P, and phi is the in order this map to be defined, we have to assume that the torsion is rational, so L torsion is rational. It's split over it. So this is why we have to make some extension. So, and if we do that, then I can quotient here by L times the same thing, and I get an isomorphism. So we do have an isomorphism between that group and that group, and it is given by, say, cohomology or Kumar theory. So the last difficulty is that we want to compute this. The first obstacle is that we need to divide P by L. And dividing a point in a Jacobian, that's extremely difficult. If I give you a point in a Jacobian and I say divide it by 2, you have no chance in general. You cannot divide it by 2. It doesn't work. Unless, of course, the order of the point is prime to 2, but that's stupid. Dividing by something in a Jacobian is essentially impossible. So what do we do to solve this almost last difficulty? Well, we say we don't really know to compute R, because we are not interested in R. We are interested in phi of R minus R. And what is this? This is phi minus 1 of R, and this is phi minus 1 of P over L, so to say, and this is phi minus 1 over L applied to P. And if we are lucky enough, inside the ring of endomorphism of the Jacobian variety, phi minus 1 is divisible by L. And if this is the case, we do not need any longer to divide by L the point P. We just divide the endomorphism first. So the question is, do we have some chance that phi minus 1 is divisible by the nice prime we have in the Jacobian? In general, no. But if it is not divisible by L, well, just make a small extension. Then you replace the Frobenius by some power of it. After some time, it will be divisible. Then we have to control, we have made many extensions. We have to control how large these extensions are. If we do like that, they are too large. And if we want to control the degree of the extensions, we cannot work in the whole Jacobian. We have to replace the Jacobian, first of all, by its state module, and second, by some divisible group inside it to get rid of some uninteresting things, divisible group, which is essentially the characteristic subspace of Frobenius attached to the proper value, attached to the eigenvalue 1. Because everything interesting is lying here. So we get rid of the rest by just projecting it into this smaller part in which the rationality properties are much better. I mean, this will help us control the degree of all these extensions. And of course, to construct such a projection, we really need to know the denominator of the zeta function, because the way you can make such a projection is just take the characteristic polynomial of the Frobenius, factor it over the field of L-adic integers, and then produce a projection using that. And this is the last trick which makes the proof of the lemma work. So in the end, we see that starting from this very naive and evident algorithm, which evidently works, proving it requires some, well, technicalities, which make it, in a sense, difficult. So I come back to my last question. Despite all these difficulties, it seems that we may hope still that we can have an algorithm which is polynomial in log L and not L. But if you want that, we should find other tricks to replace these tricks, because these tricks require to make extensions basically of degree L of the prime field. Okay, so thank you for your attention.